You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 432, the new classic crew in effect. Adam, John, Tom, triple action, Punk News Podcast 432. Let's roll.
All right. If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take it with triple trouble, y'all. We're going to bring you up to speed. Check it out. Because I'm a specializer, bomb reviser. Ain't selling out to advertisers. What you get is what you see. Come on. And you won't see me in the advertising. See, I like the party, not drink the party. Because I'm not looking to throw up for nobody. No, from a spiel, or really one deal. This is like having a delicious meal. And we're moving the crowd, well, that's a must. I got some words that apply to us. And that's mesmerizing, tantalizing. Captivate and we'll double strike.
And we're back, and this is the Punk News Podcast. Adam, how you feeling, man?
I am, John, I am kind of hungry.
Well, you should eat something.
No, I shouldn't. I'm doing one of those things, one of those, like, apps that, like, tracks your meals and your steps and all this kind of stuff, just to kind of, like, you know, help you, you know, lose weight and not be a person who is dead. And I'm like a week and a little bit into doing it, and it is interesting to me how I've stayed alive to this point. I don't know.
You can have celery. You want some celery? I'll get you some celery.
Oh man, I have a lot of celery, John. I'm an Italian guy. I've been eating a lot of fennel. I'm.
You know what's good on celery? A little peanut butter.
No, I don't think that'll compute. But like hopes and dreams,
literally the only way it's edible.
So I'm okay. I'm good. I'm actually probably like right now at this very given moment, for all intents and purposes, the healthiest I've been in a long time.
Well, there you have it, Adam White's feeling.
If a week could make
and
a
it's
difference,
all just, due to cannabis.
Well, that's the hard part, right? Is because, like, you know, of course the diet plan doesn't give a shit about cannabis, but like the cannabis makes you want to eat like all the chips. So yeah, figuring out how those two things work together is going to be interesting.
Adam, do you call it cannabis or weed or marijuana?
In conversation, probably weed.
How else would you do it? What you are you like writing like it's a study or something?
Like if I was talking about like, you know, where are they going to put the, you know, where are they going to put the store in town or something like that, or like talking about like the policy, because it's like politics up here right now, because the legalization is recent, so there's all this you know, debate over, you know, how different cities or different towns are interpreting the laws and this and that. If I'm in that kind of conversation, I think cannabis is sort of the safer way to do it, because everyone would be like, weed, dude. It's easier to have a
It's my fault. I called it cannabis because I'm, you know, like middle-aged.
Tom, you don't call it marijuana with an H? Marijuana?
I don't call it much of anything, honestly, John.
Well, fair enough.
I guess weed, pot, Tom, I don't know.
What's your vice of choice?
You know, I don't have a ton of, I eat too much, but I would say that is at that. And I do, like, if I go out to a show, I love to drink beer. Lots of it. At home, I like to have a cocktail or two of, gin.
Really? You drink cocktails at home?
Like, dude, okay. Cocktail of like sparkling water and gin. It's not, you know, it's not like the one grandma used to make where you stir in the lump of sugar. You know, it's pretty simple stuff.
You remember like in like I Love Lucy or whatever, like people would always be making cocktails and it'd be like this big ritual.
Oh, yeah.
Do you do that kind of thing? Like you come home and snap your fingers and say to your wife, where's my cocktail? Yeah. Where's my highball?
No, I don't do that. My wife also works, so I'm just as likely to pour her a glass of wine or something. But those I Love Lucy episodes, you know, they would like bring out the tray of cigarettes, like it's a party. Here's a giant tray of cigarettes, and I did smoke for more than 20 years, but I gave it up in my late 30s. So,
did you ever array your cigarettes on a tray, though?
I probably had them just about every way possible at some point, but that's why I have such a, you know, rich deep baritone. I have no regrets.
Tom, was it hard to give up smoking?
Oh yeah, I tried for years and years and years. Every January, I was the guy trying to give it up. And I just had to get to the point where I was just so sick of it. And now, like maybe 3 times a year, I'll be out drinking beer and have too many beers, and somebody will be having, I'll be like, hey, give me one of those. And I'll take like 2 puffs and I'll be like, oh, that's really terrible. I can't believe I did that. And so I'm totally over it. There was a time where if I cheated, I would start again. Now, nah, I'm just done. It's not part of my life anymore.
Well, they have a kid. Tom Trauma says, don't smoke. And
you well, it's different. When I graduated,
wait, are you saying people should smoke?
Yes. No, not at all. But the thing is, you know, I still think smoking had a certain cachet when you're young, like when you're a teenager, like it looks sort of badass. I see these kids with their freaking vape pens. It just looks so, it just looks so wimpy. You imagine if James Dean had been smoking a vape pen. Tom, I mean, it's just not cool, kids. So don't do anything.
Tom, I'm going to throw a very controversial question at you. Did mm-hmm. you ever benefit positively from smoking? That is, did the pretty girl in high school think you were cool because you were smoking? Did you actually have any positive benefits? They always talk about all the negative benefits.
Probably,
of smoking.
You know, probably, John. It was definitely part of my image. You know, I dressed like Johnny Ramone and I smoked, and it was just one of those things. You know, I mean, it may have had a certain air of danger. Now I have no danger. You know, I just look like a paunchy, ball, you know, 45-year-old with a graying goatee.
They have it. Tom Trauma went
to the face of danger.
Yeah, danger of like high cholesterol and like cardiac arrest.
Well, listen, Tom, but, don't go changing.
But yeah, no, I
try
can't.
And please me. Don't change the color of your hair. I'll take you just the way you are. And speaking of taking things just the way they are, you can always get podcast@punknews.org. Let's reach into the mailbag, podcast@punknews.org. This is from Dallin. Dallin says, what are your favorite rock documentaries, and what rock docs are ones you must see? Peace.
Wow, that is a really open-ended question. Because he doesn't even say punk. He says rock.
He says rock docs.
I don't really watch rock docs. I'm pretty punk-oriented. I mean, I haven't seen, like, the Foo Fighters one or anything.
That's the only one.
But I've watched a few recently that I enjoyed. I don't know about you guys. I watched the L7 one. I like that quite a bit. That's called Pretend We're Dead. I like the Mudhoney one that came out recently. It's called something about Invisible. I can't remember. Or no, I'm Now, maybe? Anyway, that one's really good. The Descendants one is great. I like American Hardcore. What do you guys like?
It's been a long time since I've actually sat down and watched one of these because it does not present itself.
There's so many streaming, Adam. There's so many great ones streaming.
Yeah,
like,
but like
watch one and then it pops up like 3 or 4 more that you should watch. I watched The Slits.
Right, but
that one I was not that keen on, just because I'm not that keen on The Slits. But
I watch The Slits. I like The Slits one. But I like I feel if you know the basics about The Slits, you don't really learn that much. And of course, it really is missing Ari Up's presence, which she's passed away, so you can't fault them for that.
Well, and even the one guitar player, is it Liv Albertine or
Viv Albertine?
She hadn't been in the band since like 1980 or something.
True, but she's like one of the main founders. You know? Like it's.
I mean, it's literally their first album was punky, and after that, it just was something totally different, which is fine, but I didn't really care for the music after the first album.
Oh, I love Slits in the entire career. I think the Slits are one of the very greatest bands ever. The documentary, it's cool. You should watch it. It's not amazing.
But, I mean, dude, their later stuff sounded like that horrible, like when Paul Simon started doing world music. Ugh,
no, it didn't. It's reggae. It's dubbed reggae.
I don't even know about that. It sounded like that. Like when Paul Simon had that African band behind him.
Tom, I don't think you were listening to Slits.
Well, I haven't extensively. I just, that later stuff when they were kind of got signed, and I just, it wasn't for me, John.
Tom, it's dub reggae. It's not Paul Simon.
It wasn't for me. I don't like dub reggae.
I'm not saying it's not for you, but I'm just saying it's not Graceland. Adam, like, tiebreaker.
I thought it was Graceland.
It's the Slits' second album, Graceland.
I heard a little bit of You Can Call Me Al. I'm not even talking their second album, I don't think. I'm talking even later than that, right? Because they had a few different versions over the years.
They only have two. Well, they've got 2 albums and then 1 reunion album.
Is that all?
That's all. And they have like demos from like before the first album.
They had like a peel session that was pretty cool and stuff like that.
The peels, actually, let's talk about the slits for a second. The slits have a lot of different phases. Gosh,
we're off the rails already. We just got started.
The slits are really cool because the peel sessions, they kind of sound like the Sex Pistols. Then on the album cut, they sound very unique. And then the next album, Earthbeat, is more like dub reggae. So they have like three very unique periods, and they're all worthwhile and all very different from each other.
Well, I think the Peel session and the Cuts album were pretty much the same. It's just it was production, right?
No, they're way the songs are the same, except for the songs are radically different. On the Peel session, the songs sound like Sex Pistols tracks. On the
Peel is that due to production or is that due to arrangement?
The lyrics are the same, but the music is entirely different on the Cut album than it is from the Peel session. Maybe we'll play. I'll do that sometime during the
episode. I'll play a song, John. I don't have one. I'll pick one out.
Okay,
don't mind.
Yeah, we'll do both the Peel session and we'll do the Cut session, so you can check out the difference.
All right, I'll let you pick this. You're the expert.
We'll do teamwork, Tom. We'll work it out together. Adam, any good rock?
We'll thumb wrestle for it.
Rock Docs, geez. Okay, my answer to this, I've brought them up on the show before, and it's sort of a boring answer. But when I was in college, and I was watching a lot of these things, like I was I was a huge fan of Westway to the World. I was a huge fan of the Filth and the Fury, which would be the Clash and the Pistols one.
Yeah.
But fuck, I'm trying to think of one that I've watched in the past like decade.
You watched the Descendants one, right?
I don't know if I have. To tell you the truth.
Oh, really? Did you watch the Descendants one, John?
I have seen the Descendants one. Yes,
it's worth watching. Did you think I liked that? I liked it.
Yeah, it's definitely worth watching for sure.
And what about
here's my issue with these Rock Doc things. My TV watching now goes into two modes. It is either something that in the few hours where there isn't a child trying to murder me, I can sit down with my wife and watching TV. And, you know, we have our shows. We have our shows we're burning through. And that is generally not a rock documentary. And the other time that I have to watch TV is when I'm like doing the dishes or puttering around my house and I turn something on my phone. And that is also not a great, it's not a great way to consume something that is I'd want to pay attention to. It's not a good way to consume something music based in particular. It's a great way to watch old episodes of Deep Space Nine, but it is not really a way
something that doesn't require all your attention.
No, it requires very little of my attention, which is great. So yeah, I don't know. There's this when I'm 60. That's my answer. When I'm 60, I'm going to watch all the rock documentaries.
What about the other F word? Did you watch that?
I did.
Yeah, but you know where I saw that? It was the craziest thing. It was the fucking craziest thing. So I had just learned that my wife was pregnant with our first kid, and I went to Pooza Fest.
It wouldn't have had the impact yet then. You got to be a dad for a while, I think, to really.
I know, but like I went to Pooza in Montreal, and Punk News had a little cadre of people that were there. So it was me and was it me and Kira and was Sam there? Sam was there, I think. And but anyways, Sam was there. Sam and Chris were there. So in any case, we had this little group of Punk News people there, and as one of the parts of Pooza, they had like the Punk Rock Film Festival, which is just they rented out this like cool little art theater on St. Catherine Street in Montreal, and they were just running a handful of, you know, punk related films throughout the thing. And I popped in there like in the middle of the afternoon one day, like when there wasn't any shows or anything going on, and sat in the dark with, you know, four or five other people that decided that this was how they were going to be at a rock festival, and watched the other F word. And it was very affecting because I'm like, holy fuck, I'm on the cusp of this. It was kind of infuriating because the dude from Everclear, I think, was a large part of it. And that is not a band that would have been on the top. It would not have been on my top, like, 50 bands to bring into the punk rock fatherhood documentary. It seemed like a strange addition.
It was Jim Lindbergh more than anybody, right?
Lars
Fredrickson was in it. There was a few different people that had small parts.
Lars was adorable in that.
That Art Alexis from Everclear was fortunate enough to have a real traumatic childhood, so like it really played into that.
No, I mean, like his contribution to the thing was totally valid, but if you were just to give me the poster and be like, these guys from these bands are in this fatherhood documentary, I'd be like, Everclear? Like, is that a band that is a band we're talking about?
You know what's funny, Adam, is I have no particular love for Everclear. Once they got big, their music certainly took a turn for the alt rock. But they used to come. They were a hard touring band. They used to play at our dingiest, shittiest, famous little punk club here. So I sort of have to give them props for kind of doing it the right way. Coming up, they were not one hit wonders. You know, they were like in their 30s when they made it, and they did it the proper way. So I actually don't have any bone to pick with them, no matter how many times I had to hear Santa Monica on the radio, or yeah, Father of Mine, for that matter.
They're a band whose history that I just do not know it, but I only knew them from the Radiohead, and it seemed very odd to me. But that aside, yes. So I watched that at Pooza, and it meant a lot to me at the time to go see that. But yeah, I haven't seen anything of recent. This is actually something that I need recommendations on, as opposed to the other. Netflix keeps screaming at me to watch the L7 one, so I really
that's
need
pretty,
to.
That's pretty cool. I would watch that.
Do that.
I will tell you the best rock doc there is. My Career as a Jerk, the Circle Jerk documentary.
And here's I haven't seen that.
It's actually fantastic, and here's why. You know, there's kind of two ways to do a document. Well, there's more than two, but the Minutemen documentary for me was very disappointing because I didn't really learn anything about the Minutemen. It was literally just an hour and a half of people saying the Minutemen were great. They changed everything. The Minutemen were so awesome. But what did they actually do? You know, whereas My Career as a Jerk or My Life as a Jerk, the Circle Jerks documentary, starts from the very beginning and goes to the very end and tells the story of the Circle Jerks as told by the Circle Jerks. And it's perfect in that, like, it doesn't have a whole lot of people say, oh, yeah, man, it's like it changed my world the first time I heard it. Like, it doesn't have any of that, really, or maybe it's got a little bit of that. But it's very factual. It's just the Circle Jerks telling the story of the Circle Jerks. And now I know
the good, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
And actually, they were very forthright in that the first three Circle Jerks albums are amazing, and even they said that the last three were not that good and were kind of messed up. You know, so I highly recommend.
I mean, you obviously read the Keith Morris book.
Yes,
it's fresh in my mind because I literally just finished it like yesterday. I've been slowly reading it. I've enjoyed it so much I didn't want to read it too fast. But yeah, they say that like the Oddities Abnormalities album, which I sort of liked when it came out in like the mid 90s, that it was just like an abortion. It had three good songs and it never should have been made.
Yeah, the three good songs in that album are like really good. It's just the rest.
Well,
you know?
And like one of them's a Robin Hitchcock cover. I mean, it was just anyway, boy, we've gone a long way from where we started, but.
Well, anyways,
watch those rock doc kids. Yeah, watch the punk docs.
For me, like autobiography, they're almost always kind of disappointing, you know. And that, like, I never really feel like I learned as much as I wanted to learn.
Keith Morris one was pretty great, I thought. Honestly,
one is fantastic. I just wish it was four times as long. You know,
he doesn't even get into Flag at all.
Yeah, but and plus also like he couldn't really get into trashing Greg Ginn because there was like lawsuit issues and stuff, yeah. You know, and. But I gotta say, the Keith Morris, I'm actually looking at it right now. The Keith Morris autobiography, The Story of a Punk Rock Survivor, probably my favorite book, music book.
I read the Wayne Kramer one at the end of last year, and that was really good too. That was actually even better than the Keith Morris one. But yeah, there's a lot of good ones out there.
All right. Well, as always, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org. Tom, you want me to play Slitz Track, or you want to play Slitz Track?
No, you go ahead, John. Ignorant of specific songs.
We'll play probably what's my favorite Slitz song, Shoplifting. We're first going to play the Peel session version, and then we're going to play the Cut session version, and you'll see how radically different the song is. So this is the Slitz twice doing Shoplifting. Shoplifting.
how she a warm suspect. Or maybe does. Or maybe does. Babylonian won't lose much, and we have dinner tonight. Dorana, 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 Dorana. Cameras trying to watch us, mirrors on TV, but they're not gonna catch us, cause we're gonna, gonna, gonna run, run, run. Dorana, 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 run!
And we're back. Let's get into the news this week. Boys NoFX, the perennial popular punk band at Punk News, they're doing the Singles of the Month Club once again. They did it before, I believe in the late 90s or early 2000s, where once a month they put out a new single, and they're doing that again. And not only that is you can submit your art for the cover, and they might put your art on some of the covers. A lot of labels have done the 12-inch single, I mean the 7-inch single club. I know Sub Pop did it. Joyful Noise did it, and someone else did it as well. They used to do the Singles Club, and they've come and they've gone. I've got some thoughts on it, but I guess for you two, are you guys excited for a NoFX Singles Club? And do you think the Singles Club itself is a good idea? Or instead of paying $120 for 24 songs, would you rather just spend $11.99 for 14 songs on a CD?
Well, they did it before, right? Did you mention? Did you just say that?
They did it once before, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was like 15 years ago, I think. Close to it.
And also, this is about $100. Is that a fair price? Is another question.
So $100 for 12 7 inches?
Yeah, it's about 100. Maybe 120 after shipping, something like that.
Oh, God. You know, I'm not going to do it because the last time they did it, all those songs pretty much ended up on the album Wolves in Wolves Clothing, I think, are a good portion of them, which I do love that record. But I don't know. I've got a problem. I have a vinyl collecting problem, but I don't know why. I'm not signing up for this. It's not for me.
Didn't they have that double? They had a double compilation CD. It was like 45 or 46 songs that weren't good enough for the rest of our records.
Yeah, that was actually just all kinds of 7 inches and weird.
Yeah, that had like the Fuck the Kids was on there.
Yeah, and but didn't I swear Wolves and Wolves Clothing was like a bunch of that was the 7-inch series too, wasn't it?
That I don't remember because I didn't buy
Wolves
it the first
and Wolves
time.
Clothing had a lot of the songs from the Singles of the Month Club, about
maybe
five or six songs. Yeah. Okay. Re-record it, yeah.
Did you do it the first time, Adam?
No, and see, I'm actually at the point in my life where I would do one of these. I don't feel I'm all that hot on NoFX right now that I would do this one. But
yeah, I hear you there.
But like, given the right band or the right label or something, like I might be in it for it, especially if I'm pretty sure that stuff isn't going to show up anywhere. Like the Dirty Nails actually done this twice. I don't know if they've done it for a whole year or so, but they've done like 7-inch subscription series or whatever, and those songs generally didn't show up anywhere else, or they'd show up on like really weird projects or something, but never collected on a record or in a way that was like mass accessible afterwards. And I respect that, but yeah, but even those, like it didn't seem financially sound for me to go and purchase anything there. So I'm down for this idea. I think I would love to see a label that has a strong sense of character do something like this again. And I don't know But I don't know who that is, right? Like, if you wanted to say, like, take our perennial punching bag label, Rise Records, right? Rise couldn't do something like this because you wouldn't know what you'd get, right?
Yeah, too many different kinds of sounds. Yeah.
It would be all over the place.
Yeah.
No idea back in their heyday when all of their bands were, like, some swampy-sounding variant of the, you know, hot water music sound, yeah. Right? That would have been perfect, because so many of those bands just had a common. They didn't sound the same, but they have a common.
Honestly, Fat Wreck probably could have done it back in the day, Adam. I mean, all their bands had so much fan crossover.
Yeah, so that would be cool, and it would be what I like about these types of things. And this is perhaps why I'm okay with the cost differential between this and just putting out a record, is because if you put out a record, you're putting out a piece of art that's supposed to function as that, right? It has songs that are sequenced in a way that is supposed to be enjoyable. You want a side A and a side B that feel contiguous. You're trying to make a singular statement. For something like this, you can get weird, and you can go and record wacky songs and things like that that you would maybe not normally put out on something as big and official and as prominent a part of, say, your legacy as your next LP would be. It's probably the reason why I like tapes so much these days. It's just because, like, bands with no money will go and do, like, fucking weird things on tapes, and they'll make, like, 20 tapes that have this on it, and then it's never gonna show up as that band's legacy one day and be like, well, their first record was really good, but woof, did you hear what they did in that tape? That was weird. It's like the medium sort of implies this is gonna be weird, and this is gonna be loose, and this might be a little bit crazy. So I'm cool with that. So this kind of feels like that too. Now, that said, this is not Because fuck, I've looked into this. Like, pressing 7 inches ain't cheap, and making 12 7 inches, even if you're doing like a run of 300 of each of them, that ain't cheap. Like, that's just there's a lot of money being plunked down just in the
I assume it's a much bigger run than that, though.
Right. I don't know. I don't know how many of these they.
I mean, it's got to be at least 1,000, right?
Oh, I'm thinking it's probably about 5,000.
That's kind of what I was thinking. That was kind of what I was thinking too. It's got to be in the thousands, which does keep your cost down a little bit.
But
7 inches are definitely very surprisingly expensive to make.
It's all about quantity, fellas. It's all about quantity.
Hey, you know what? You know what I just realized is, remember, like, about 3 years ago, people would complain when a 7-inch was, like, $8 or $9, or, like, you know, a 7-inch was supposed to be $4, which they were in the 90s. People now happily pay $12 for a 7-inch, I think, because they've gotten used to the price. But that really is kind of what it costs to make a 7-inch, you know what I mean? Like, $7 or $8 is what it costs to make a 7-inch, you know?
Well, are you giving me are you giving me, like, a 5-song mini album, or are you giving me a 2-song single, too? It makes a difference.
In my example that I'm giving, two song single.
Because it doesn't cost any more to put 5 songs on it than it does to put 2 songs on it.
Correct.
You actually can ratchet the price of these things up a bit if you try to compress more stuff onto there than the people that are pressing it think is a reasonable amount of audio for you to put on there. Because if you want to fit more,
well,
right?
I'm not even talking an unreasonable amount. You can put 5 or 6 minutes on a side.
Well, no, that's fine. I mean, if you want to start to stretch it, it means they got to make the grooves tighter together, and it's harder to manufacture.
Dude, that's like a hardcore LP. If you put like 6 minutes on each side, 12-minute, it's like make an LP.
Well, it's
no. So I've looked into this, and if you're a small band and you want to do like the minimum run of 7 inches, it's gonna cost you $2,000 to do that. And like, just as far as the getting them made, there's nothing about the actual, you know, recording of your music, or if you have to pay someone to make art for you or anything like that. It's more or less $2,000 for that.
For how many?
300.
500? 300. Oh my gosh.
And then there's, you have the problem is, well, you know, you could cut back here, you could cut back there, and you cut back, and wow, you've got a shitty looking 70s that you spend a lot of money on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, with a crappy black and white folded you know, cover.
Yeah. Now that puts your cost right at just you know about $6.66 per unit. So
without packaging and without recording.
Right, yeah. I mean, hey, if you want to put it, that's the thing. Like, oh, you want them in sleeves, right? Like, everything you're going to do is going to knock that price up a little bit. So I don't feel...
You get a nice 7-inch and a nice plastic sheath and a nice color glossy thing. I mean, you. I don't know. It's more likely to get played more often around my house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like the overall nicer packaging really gives you a little bit of an advantage.
The other thing, because I have been looking into this, is... What I've been told by label people right now is, unlike, say, 4 or 5 years ago, like, this is a recent thing, 7 inches aren't selling.
I still buy them.
No, I buy them from bands. I think it's more like stores won't take them, stores won't stock them.
Oh, they hardly have any most places, you know? It's hard to find a good
record.
So unless you're running everything from a mail order standpoint, and you know there's a lot of cool mail order kind of catalog labels that do tons of 7 inches, like that's how you have to be okay moving them. Like you've got to be, I think, prepared to be running like an internet thing to do this. So, but hey, what were we talking about? It's the 7-inch club. John, you would have thought. What was your thought?
My one thought is everyone was laughing at the JJG in 2014 when he put out a cassette tape, and now who's laughing? Who? Me, who's laughing?
Laughing all the way to the bank.
the negative bank.
The sperm bank so you could pay for your tapes.
So anyways, I wish I was a Grateful Dead fan. Because every other month or every 3 months, like the Grateful Dead have a – I've tried to get into the Grateful Dead probably 5 times, and I just cannot do it. I just cannot get into – they're so
good
bad.
Good for you, John. You like enough crap as it is.
They're so boring. They're so incredibly boring. Like they're so bad.
Dude, you have to be on drugs. You have to be on drugs.
The point being is every 3 months they put out like a live album as part of – they've got a couple – there's Dick's Picks. Then there was like the Road Tour one or Road Trips. And I think
– Yeah, Dick's Picks kind of lost its luster. Do you think it's because, you know, people started sending each other dick pics?
Yeah, I never thought you were writing the original dick pic. So anyways, the point being is, I wish if I was a fan of the great, imagine if, like, one of your favorite bands, like, every 3 months you get a new live album. Like, that would rule. Yeah. It's too bad the Grateful Dead are
Oakland
terrible.
Hey, did you hear Oakland 74?
So anyways, the point being is, this is always so good in theory, but it almost never works out in practice. Like, I was part of the Sub Pop Singles Club for 1 year, because they put out a rare Ohm 7-inch, and I was part of the Hardly Art, not Hardly Art, a Joyful Noise one, because they put out a Melvin 7-inch, and actually that 7-inch is amazing. It's Melvin and Terry Genderbender doing Rebel Girl by Bikini Kill, and it rules. But so what I got, one record that I absolutely loved, and 11 that I didn't give a crap about at all.
Yeah, you would get filler. It's inevitable, because like Adam said, they're going to feel comfortable getting a little weird. Which is great. So some of the weird B-sides, you'd be like, man, that's amazing. They should do that more. And some of them would be like, okay, they didn't put much thought into that. That's likely to be the case.
So, in theory, like, labeled 7-inch singles clubs sound great, but they're the only one I think I would want would be, like, either maybe Burger Records or probably Alternative Tentacles. That'd be or Crass Records, circa 1981.
Alternative Tentacles is another one, though, John, where, boy, talk about stylistically all over the place.
Yeah, but you know what?
You might get sludge metal. You might get punk rock. You might get some weird demonic folk punk. You know, you just never know what you're going to get.
But at least with Alternative, it's usually interesting with Alternative Tentacles. Like with the Sub Pop one, it's just like college rock that I don't give a shit about. You know what I mean?
Just all metal grunge.
Yeah, exactly. However, like, if your favorite band, like the Melvins actually have done two single series. They did one in the 90s, and it was so awesome because the A-side was like a Melvins track, and the B-sides were like these whacked out, like, thing, like, just total experiments, and it's, like, really cool. Then they did one about 5 years ago where they did a live track on one side and another band on the flip side, and that was even kind of more fun because one of them has a exclusive off track, another one has an exclusive effed up track, and being the Melvins, one of them has them on the A side and them again on the B side, which I think is hilarious because that's the Melvins. So the point being is, if it's a band you love, it's awesome, but if it's not a band you love, then I wouldn't bother. But you know, that's kind of the point of art, isn't it? It's like a If you're a Novex fan, you would love this, so I would recommend it. If you're not, I want to get this just to check it out.
You know, it's funny you say that, John, because there's been two series that I can really say I've been obsessed with over the years that I have every one of. And one of them was the old BYO split series. One of those was actually NoFX Rancid. But that BYO split series was great. They only did five of them, and they were right around 2000, 2001, 1999, and then they quit doing them, and I don't know what happened.
I love that series. I did too,
but like I said, they only made five of them. And then there's this little label that's been putting out this newer split series, started like a year or two ago, and there's only four versions of it so far, but I got every one of them, and I'm just like waiting with bated breath to see what the next one's going to be. They do 500 vinyl, that's it, random color, and so it's like you kind of got to get on it, you know? And I'm having fun with that. But, yeah, it's – I don't – like I said, the NoFX thing, I think I'll skip that.
Not to drag this out, but you guys, it is – when something's hyper-limited, it's awesome when you have it. But when you don't have it, it sucks. You know what I mean? So, anyways.
Well, it's like, okay, I want to buy this record, but it's the only one I want from this label, and it's going to cost me $25 to have it sent to my house. Do I roll the dice and hope to find it at a record store? Or maybe hope that they put something else out so I could save shipping by buying two things? Or do I buy it now? That's the thrill. It's the not knowing, like, if I wait, am I going to get screwed?
Another Clash documentary is coming out. It's actually a podcast, and it's going to be called Stay Free, The Story of the Clash. And it's an eight-part documentary about the Clash. Interestingly, it's going to be narrated by Chuck D of Public Enemy. Adam White, fitting choice or pointless excursion? And do we need to talk about the Clash even more?
Sure, we need to talk about the Clash even more. Chuck D seems like a totally fine person to narrate this, at least from the standpoint of someone that has also has had a musical act that has been highly influenced by the aesthetic of the Clash and the look and the politics of the Clash. Like, you know, absolutely, like Public Enemy, like that matches right up. Now, the real question is Chuck D an enjoyable audio host? Can he pull off radio host? And I'm not throwing stones here, because like we're horrible, right? But this, you know, we don't have Spotify money backing this shit up. So is Chuck D the guy that you want to listen to talk about the Clash?
So you think you think they should use Flavor Flav instead?
Oh, well, I mean, Chuck D's got flow, but does he have podcast flow is what I'm asking. I don't have an answer to that.
I'm going to go out here. I'm going to go ahead and say that I just can't imagine that they couldn't have found somebody more appropriate. To say that Public Enemy is the natural outreach of the Clash, I don't know. It seems strange to me. I'm more than willing to listen to more stuff about the Clash, but I think it seems like a poor choice, sort of a politically correct choice or something. I don't know. It doesn't feel genuine to me.
You think you should use Dave Grohl is what you think?
Yeah, you know, they could probably skip Dave Grohl. How about
Flea? What's Flea up
no,
to?
No, you know who it's got to be? If you're going to do a punk doc, it's got to be either Ian MacKaye or Henry Rollins. Those are your only choices. I don't know. Maybe Chuck D will turn out to be an inspired choice. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but I don't know. It doesn't feel right to me.
You know, it's an interesting point, because let's say you got someone that was, you know, in the same vein. Let's say you got Henry Rollins. Well, that's not going to reach any new audience. And then you also have the argument, you know, the argument is like, well,
do you think Chuck D fans are going to listen to this thing about, I mean, you think Public Enemy fans are going to be like, oh, I got to listen to this thing about the Clash because Chuck D's hosting it? It's going to be all the same suburban white kids listening to it that would otherwise.
However, I think actually those suburban white kids might be more inclined to listen to it, because if it was just another Clash documentary, it's like, oh, another Clash documentary, you know, with Don Letts or whatever. But, you know, a lot of suburban white kids are big Public Enemy fans, you know, so they're like, oh, well, I like to Clash
and Public Enemy. Yeah, in the 90s.
Who do you think listened to this? Staff or Sean? Listen, Staff or Sean is listening to some band called, like, you know, My Lonely Heart, Where Are Thou Under the
it's
Drain
like a set.
Grate. You,
yeah,
you,
it's you know
what?
Yes.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I mean, who are we
No, fooling? No, I get that. But I'm saying, like, but none of the kids listen to Public Enemy now, Jude. My kids are young. They listen to pop music, and they would have no idea who Public Enemy is.
Are your kids listening to The Clash, Tom?
No, they're listening to like freaking Post Malone.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying they're playing to they're playing to us, really. They're playing to our age.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Listen, I'm open to listen to this. I have not been very good at listening to podcasts lately, but I probably should try to get back into it.
Well, speaking of people that aren't doing very good, Pledge Music, they got problems. Of course, Pledge Music is one of the first and one of the biggest crowdfunding sites where, and like, let's say Tom's putting out an album, you know, Tom and the Traumas, they'll say, all right, we want to put out an album.
Spoken word. It's going to be like the Black Flag Family Man album. Half of it's going to be me doing spoken word, and the other half's going to be doing experimental punk jazz.
Sounds riveting.
about as riveting as the Family Man album.
Yeah. So Tom will say, I need $5,000. Who wants to pay me $5,000? And people contribute $10 or $20 and get random stuff. Well, Pledge Music last year faced a lot of problems because a lot of artists were saying, you're taking way too long to give us money. You're supposed to give us money within 7 days, and we're not getting money for like 2 or 3 months. Just this past week, Pledge Music actually ceased all active campaigns because they weren't able to make payments at all. And they didn't give a reason for the suspension, but it's pretty clear that they've got severe funding issues. And as of right now, it's not clear if Pledge Music is going to reactivate or what's going to happen to those suspended campaigns. Even what I thought was even more interestingly, one would think that Pledge Music wouldn't be mixing funds. That is, because they weren't able to make payments, it appears that they're taking money that's donated for records and using that to pay their costs, and then using future income to pay for the previous records, if you see what I'm saying. Am I being clear with regards to that?
Hmm. It's like a Ponzi scheme.
That's what I'm saying. It appears they're running just like a Ponzi scheme. I can't think of any other explanation as to why they couldn't make payments for money collected for on behalf of artists. So is it the end? Is there something sneaky going on? And, you know,
it's the end, dude. It's the end.
For a while, crowdfunding was really popular. I feel like it's not as popular now as it was 2 years ago. Did you guys dig the crowdfunding model?
No. I really strongly dislike it. Like, I actually just like a month ago, for the first time ever, contributed to one to help somebody get the record made. I went in at a very, very low level. But it had all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, come to my house for a concert kind of perks and stuff. But I guess part of it is just because I'm older and I grew up with the idea of make the record and I'll buy the record. That's it. You know what I mean? But I understand people don't have a lot of these artists don't have enough money now to get things started, but I still am a believer in, you know, if you make something good that people want, people will buy it.
I don't agree with that statement necessarily. Adam?
I've definitely crowdfunded a few things. They tend to have been books in my life, but not records. But like I helped crowdfund the Ted Leo record that he put out last year. And I don't know. I'm torn on it because on the one hand, I like the idea of being able to give the money directly to the artists so that they can go and make the thing.
I'll give my money directly to them when it's sitting on their merch table.
Well, right. Like that's what I was kind of coming around to, is like that there are other ways to achieve that, and it sounds stupid, but it does feel like you are just sort of like throwing some money into the pit, especially if it's something where that record isn't going to get made for 7-8 months or a year or whatever it is after you put in the funding. Like, as a consumer, I don't feel particularly good about the crowdfunding participation that I've done. It always feels like, I don't know, like the delay in in actually getting the end product never feels great. I've never been burned by it. I know a lot of people have, right?
I was burned once for $100.
Yikes. Yeah, but like, what level was that? And what were you supposed to get for your $100?
I was supposed to get an artist I don't really care about was recording something, and they were like, and if you give us the highest level, we'll also give you another album recorded with two of John's favorite bands that we recorded with them. And none of it ever came. I got a digital download of the artist's album. I actually chased him down. I got the money
for
back.
For $100.
I got the money back from him personally like 3 years
later. Nice.
Oh, shit. But no, I feel on the one hand, I'm way more content to actually use like Patreon for funding things. And so there's like a handful of podcasts that I'll throw like $1 or $5 at because my engagement with it is more immediate. Like I'm listening to that podcast several times a month for, you know, several hours all added up a month. And hey, that's a pretty good deal as far as like entertainment dollar goes. But I don't know if that would work for a musician. I've seen it for a musician, but I don't know if it would work.
I think the crowdfunding, I mean, honestly, though, it's really not that expensive to make a CD. And if you're a band, like, it's not that expensive to make a record. I know we just talked about how, but listen, if you guys want to make 300, you know, 307 inches or even 312 inches, it's going to be about, you know, $2,000 or $3,000. There's five of you. You each save up $600, $700. Bada bing, bada boom, you got a product. You sell it, you get your money back, and you get some money back on top of that, you know. So it's really not that hard to make that much money. That being said, I think it's cool and it's a good way to get what I like most about it is that they do have exclusive things that you can only get if you're like an early or a hardcore fan, which I've gotten some neat stuff out of that. But Adam's right that it usually is like 9 months later, it's like, oh, here's something that I ordered like 9 months ago. I kind of forgot about it. This is cool, but I'm not as jazzed right now. So I got no problems with it, but you know.
Well, it's a strange thing, you know, because you look at, like, back in the old days, the artists, like, I'm talking, like, medieval times, right? A king would take a shining to an artist.
Right, right.
And an artist could survive because one rich person would take interest in them. And now it's sort of, like, democratized over, like, a bunch of poor people can sort of support the artists. We can all get a little slice. But you're right. The thing I have coming would probably, like, show up in the mail, and I've totally forgotten about it by the time.
Oh, actually, along those lines, I'm going to add something in. We'll talk about this next story later. Let's talk about this. The Damned are going on tour, a short tour, about 2 weeks in May, hitting up Punk Rock, going in, hitting up Camp Anarchy. They're doing all of Machine Gun Etiquette in full. Two things to discuss. Do you guys think complete album show is cool? When Damned did Machine Gun Etiquette in full for the 35th anniversary of that album. However, they did the whole album in full, but they also put in other tracks in between each of the Machine Gun Etiquette tracks. So they kind of like spread it out. Second is at Alex's Bar in Long Beach, it's $80 a ticket to see the Damned. Are the Damned worth $80 a ticket?
But isn't it like a 300 club?
Yeah, 300. Someone said 180, someone else said 300. That's about what the capacity is, they say. So,
If I was a super fan of any band and I was in a club that small, I would pay that. I like the Damned a lot. I wouldn't call myself a super fan, but I would pay that for a lot of bands to see them in a small club like that. Hell, half the time it's 50 to see them in a big place, you know?
That seems expensive, but, you know, classic bands doing something cool. It's something you can pay a one time, you know, splurge on the one time thing.
Yeah, I agree, Adam. But on the other hand, like people pay like, you know, $300 to see Elton John or Billy Joel or Paul McCartney, you know, and Paul McCartney was amazing. So if Paul McCartney, one of the most famous rock and rollers, is worth $300, shouldn't one of the most famous punkers be? I mean, like if the Damned, as punkers, if the Damned don't deserve $80, then who does? And I'm not saying that's not a high price, because it definitely is a high price. But if we as a society are going to accept outrageous ticket prices, which we do now, then if any of the punk rockers should get $80, it should be the Damned, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Ramones Holograms are the only other people I'd pay that much for.
People would, though, pay like $80 for that, you know?
No, I it's ticket prices have gotten out of hand, but it's funny because most punk shows are still cheap, you know?
I saw a meme a little while ago, but it's your punk ticket prices are actually dropping, which is insane. But then, like,
It's $5, dude. I see bands 20 something years apart, and it's $5 in 1995, and then it's $5 in 2018.
Yeah, so it's like $2.75 in, like, you know, but someone said
real dollars, and there's less people there.
Like punkers will go see, like, you know, like Beyonce and spend $200, like, oh, Beyonce was amazing, but then they'll complain about it. $12 show, you know what I mean?
So. Oh yeah, I won't go see the pop show. So I'm.
Do you guys?
But yeah, I'd like to see Machine. I mean, if you're gonna see a whole album by the Damned, you'd either want to see Machine Gun Etiquette or Damn Damn Damned. At least I would. As long as they stick, you know, the highlights from Damn Damn Damned in there, I'd be cool with that.
I saw the Damned do all of Machine Gun Etiquette and then all of the Black album. And it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
The Black album.
Do you guys think ticket prices will ever go back down, or do you think they'll never go back down?
Well, we're on an economic high right now. I think they potentially could go back down. The big shows. I mean, at punk shows, no, they can't go any lower. It's pretty much free if they go any lower. But I think, the price of tickets for shows that the baby boomers are really what's driving the crazy prices.
True.
Because, you know, if you want to go see Bruce Springsteen or something, the 60-year-old guy can afford to pay $300 to go see. But it's, you know, I'd say they're probably keeping the young folks out of some of these shows with the ticket prices. My daughter got tickets, and I don't think I'll go with her. I hope she goes with a friend, but if she needs a date, I guess I'll take her. But she got tickets for 21 Pilots. Which is, they're very popular, I guess. And, like, it was like $70 to sit in the bleachers.
Adam White, ticket prices, will they ever go back down?
I keep going to shows that are like fucking pay what you can shows. So yeah, I don't know. Can they go lower than
plus, that? Plus Adam is Canadian. I mean, his shows, if he's going to a $5 show, it's literally like $3.50 of real money, American money.
All right, somebody play a song.
All right, here. So there's a
Adam band. Adam will make up for my pot shot at his Canadian money by playing a Canadian band now.
Fucking right I am. So here you go. So this is a band that I know nothing about in particular. There is a music blog called Neon Waste that is run out of Vancouver by the guy that by Josh, who runs Neon Taste Records. Josh plays in Fashionism and Chain Whip and a bunch of cool bands, and he's always talking about neat stuff that is going on out there. So he pointed out these ones, and I've just latched onto it, and I fucking bought the cassette the other day. So the cassette is on its way.
Adam is so full, this band, full into the cassette revolution, huh?
Well, here's the thing: is like, so the band you has a John. Cool so that. Well, it's more like this, right? This band puts out a 12-song record. It's a little fast punk band, so every song is there's songs on this record that are like 22 seconds long, 16 seconds long, right? So it's like a super compact little thing. It's really an EP if you want to think about it. But in any case, so they put it out, so you can go onto Bandcamp and you can. I don't know what it costs, because if I go on to Bandcamp, it says I own this. Hold on, let me find out. Let's go to the secret window. The secret window. It says, okay, so buy digital album, $5, right? Or the cassette is $7, and you get all the downloads. And their shipping on it was actually very reasonable for Canada, which was $3. So I'm like, I really like this band. This is great. I'll give them like $10, whatever. That was fine. So now I get a cassette out of it. I get a little trinket, right? So there you go. It's that's why I like the cassette thing. It's economical. Anyways, this is a band from Vancouver. They're called Bedwetters Anonymous. And they have a record that is out that is their first official release that hasn't been a bunch of demos or something like that, which is called R.U, so are you experiencing discomfort? ? And it's all in caps. So there is a naked man on the cover of it. and it's gross. It's a gross cover. They took the Statue of David and they made it all gross. But anyways, though, the band is super good. They're super fun. They're super wacky. So I'm going to play a song called Absolute Panic from Bedwetters Anonymous, and you should get into them. They're great. Here you go.
Back, and that was Bedwetters Anonymous. And I just realized Adam White cut my Ramones Core Prony story from it. Well, I'm putting it back in.
And I'm no.
Like, did I? Not intentionally.
Oh, okay. So
what
anyway,
are we talking about?
There's this guy called Big Moose Man Holington, and he put out an album called...
My favorite review of the last couple weeks, by the way.
Well, thank you. He put out an album called Cop Till You Drop, and it's a Ramones Core album about being a brony. A brony is an adult person that's a fan of My Little Pony. I believe it's an adult male that's a fan of My Little Ponies. And not only that is he's a bad brony. That is, there's, if you watch the Brony documentary with John DeLancey, and of course, Adam, who is John DeLancey?
I have no idea.
John DeLancey is Q, John.
Exactly, Q from Star Trek The Next Generation. If you watch the documentary, John DeLancey explains that there's good bronies and bad bronies. Good bronies
really?
Watch My Little Pony for the entertainment purposes. Bad bronies watch My Little Ponies in order to whack off to My Little Ponies. So anyways, there's this guy called Big Moose Man Holington who put out this album called Clop
Till. I mean, just the guy's Big Moose Man Holington.
So he
I swear I'm not drinking, kids. I'm not drinking tonight.
He put out this album about so I reviewed this album, and the first half of the album is just him like doing Ramones Core and like singing about My Little Ponies, which is kind of funny, you know. But the second half gets really messed up, like I felt like gross and uneasy. Like he gets really really explicit, and like it goes on. It's like unhealthy. You know what I mean? Like it's not funny anymore. It's like gross.
Dude, it's unhealthy long before it gets explicit, but.
Well, I'm saying like it was gross. Like, listen, I've been listening to Gwar for years. I think Gwar is hilarious. This was gross. This was so gross. And here's the question: he's putting out another album tomorrow. But here's the question: it's not a good album. It's pretty bad. Like it's gross, but it doesn't even sound that good. But it's very interesting. Like, I don't know if this guy truly is a disturbed person, and he's putting out like disturbing recordings. He actually put out a promo video, and if you watch the video kind of reads like the work of a disturbed person. I don't, but maybe he's just a good actor, or he's just a guy that's a really good actor that is having fun with this like really going like kind of like not everyone always says G.G. Allen, you know, kind of like G.G. Allen, but not as far as G.G. Allen, but someone. That, well, actually, G.G. Allen was disturbed, wasn't he? Someone that is, you know...
Yeah, listen, dude. G.G. Allen was...
So anyways...
be more disturbed than G.G. Allen.
You know, no, G.G. Allen was... You're right. G.G. Allen... I think another example might be someone... Like, who's, like, really famous for, like, gross-out... Like, super gross-out humor.
Mentors.
Yeah, there you go. Mentors, there you go. So the question is... Is this guy a truly disturbed individual, or is this a good actor portraying a truly disturbed individual? In either scenario, should we give this art notice? Should we talk about it, or should we just ignore it because either way is unhealthy? Or is one way healthy and another way is not healthy? How do we handle something like this? That's the question.
I'm just going to go ahead and not handle it at all, John, honestly. Are you gonna review the new album?
Are you gaslighting me? Is this an actual thing that that we talked about and you wanted to talk about and exists?
You got to read the review, Adam. You really have to read the review. It's pretty humorous.
Oh, fuck. There it is. Wow. Okay. Never mind. I totally missed that this was a thing. Oh, my God. All right.
I don't know why I became aware of this brony kind of... I have a certain amount of awareness of this subculture, but it's just so bizarre. And who knows? I mean, unfortunately, how do we know, John, if he's doing it as a joke or if he's into it?
I think he actually might, because if you watch the promo video for the second album, we've all seen videos.
Are his eyes kind of like darting around? It's all in the eyes.
Yeah, kind of like we've all seen videos on YouTube, like a video by a truly disturbed person, you know, or whatever. Like, I get the impression this guy might actually be truly disturbed, or at least weird, but not healthy weird, unhealthy weird.
How did you come across this album for review?
I'll tell you exactly how I came across it. There's a label called Captain Crook Records, and they put out like copies of like 10 records, like 25 not records, cassettes, like 10 cassettes, 25 cassettes. I came across them because so Butch Riley is married to a lady named Gabby Lala. Gabby Lala and Butch Riley's in the Coup, and I'm a huge Coup fan. He appears uncredited on some Gabby Lala recordings. And so I was creeping through Bandcamp trying to find him on some Gabby Lala recordings, and I came across his label called Captain Crook Records, who put out 10, 25, 5 copies of certain things. And I'm like, wow, that's like super, that's interesting.
Five copies?
Some stuff they only put out 5 copies. I'm like, that's really interesting. And I saw this
like
one,
a real big moneymaker.
And I saw this one thing. It's My Little Pony's Ramones Court, 20 copies only. And I'm like, I am buying this. It's $3. I am going to check this out. And did I get an earful? Let me tell you, did I get an earful?
Well, the question that you're asking though is something that is not new, and I think no one has it's perplexed the music community ever since we've started to embrace. Strange noises and outsider art and all this other stuff, right? And it goes back, right? So you had someone like Wildman Fisher, who was a Zappa prodigy, and protege, not prodigy, was like a Zappa protege, right? Where he was basically like a guy standing on a street corner shouting, and he was brought in and groomed by Zappa, and they, you know, they made some records, but you know, he fucking died in an institution, I'm pretty sure. And you look back and say, like, you know, did people like his stuff because it was artistically daring and it was out there, or what was it? Was it like what am I looking for here? What's the term? Like when you're like rubbernecking an axe. Right, like, is it something people are
like
watching
morbid,
because
morbid curiosity? Yeah,
they're treating it like a freak show more than they are anything real. I mean, the same could be said about like Wesley Willis's music, right?
Yeah, Wesley Willis was exactly who I was thinking of.
I actually disagree. People certainly did treat Wesley Willis like a freak show, but I actually disagree with that stance. Like, if you read Wesley Willis's things, a lot of them are like really, really funny. Like I whooped Spider-Man's ass. Like, that's a funny story. You know, that's funny. And I think it's disrespectful of people with mental issues and mental health issues, but also mental impairments, if you will, to say, oh, well, just because you have mental health issues or just because you have mental health means you can't be funny. You couldn't possibly mean to be funny. When I think it's clear, if you listen to Wesley Willis's stuff, he's intending to be funny, and a lot of his stuff really is funny. So I think Wesley Willis, like, I'm not going to listen to a whole Wesley Willis album, but I think a lot of his stuff is really funny and sometimes even touching and beautiful. So I think it's disrespectful of Wesley Willis, and I'm just talking to Wesley Willis to say, oh, well, you know, you're just making fun of him, or he couldn't possibly be artistic because he's got, you know, mental health and mental impairments, when I think you certainly can make great art if you have mental health or mental impairment issues.
No, I agree with you. But I think that's – some of the times the answer is going to be like, well, it's both. Like does this person – you know, does this person suffer from a mental illness, and are they making – or are they making art? And it's like, well, the answer probably isn't or. It's sort of like and, right? And in that case, you shouldn't just discount the art because they also are dealing with some mental illness. But anyways, so the now I don't want to use, you know, really famous examples like Wesley Willis and Wild Man Fisher and necessarily project that onto
Big Man, Big Moose Man Hollingen.
Onto Big Moose here, because I literally did not know he existed 5 minutes before now. So
your life was better 5 minutes. Your life was better.
I will reserve my judgment. Yeah.
Well, speaking of things that people are excited about, Against Me, they're writing a new album. It's been kind of a rocky road for Against Me recently. Of course, their album Transgender Dysphoria Blues was a landmark album and an excellent album, and I enjoyed it a great deal. And it really was the first Against Me album that I really, truly enjoyed. After that, they put out Shapeshift With Me, lukewarm reception. People basically agreed it was kind of a aimless record. Large Jane Grace just put out a solo record, and people, I think, weren't so hot on it. The question is, Against Me, is it over, or is Large Jane Grace just setting it up for round three? In that, you know, Against Me are pretty good at, you know, hitting the high marks, you know, kind of stumbling, and then coming back even stronger than ever. Will Against Me come back stronger than ever, or is it the end of the road?
That's an interesting thought. It'd be hard, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see, because you're allowed a little stumble. And yeah, Shapeshift With Me was not that great. And, you know, Against Me was a band that made albums fast. And Transgender Dysphoria Blues took a long time and obviously took a lot out of her. I don't know. I'd be curious to maybe doing this solo thing and playing with some different people. And she comes back maybe with a new energy. Or maybe it is over. Who knows? But we'll see.
Shapeshift With Me was fine.
Had a couple of individual songs that were pretty good, but as a coherent album, it was just okay. It wasn't bad. It just was okay.
Its greatest sin, I think, is that it was just sort of ordinary.
A little disjointed.
Yeah, but it wasn't. It wasn't bad, right?
No, none of the individual songs were bad.
But I think that's part of like, this band has had such highs, and they have for so long been, you know, as far as quote unquote mainstream punk goes, like the center of the conversation, that for them to do something that is just, you know, just fine, that is going to be seen as, you know, just kind of middle of the road, or is going to be taken as more of a misstep than, you know, if Pennywise put out another record that sounded like Pennywise, people that are in the Pennywise would be largely fine with it.
It's the 13th Pennywise album that sounds right, like Pennywise.
And the people that have been dismissing Pennywise for years would just continue to do so, and the world would keep turning. But Against Me releasing a record that doesn't, I think, demand attention seems like a misstep. So I guess Shapeshift kind of falls into that category. What I'm interested in from my own relationship with this band is I totally flaked on Bought to Rot, the Laura Jane's solo record. Like, I haven't heard it. I'm sure I heard a
very, very mellow Adam. I listened to a couple songs and I was kind of like, eh.
And I keep seeing, you know, interviews with her. There are other media that she's been putting out. She recorded she had like a little like ditty of a song that she had recorded about like going to the park with her kid or something like that. And I'm just seeing those things, and I look at them, and I look and I say, well, as a person, she seems like she's in a really good place right now, and I'm really happy for her. But it's not scratching the angry punk rock itch that Against Me, you know, has scratched in my life. So it's not immediate to me anymore. And so I hear about this where they're recording again, and I'm looking at it and going like, well, like, all right, like, you know, I hope it's cool, but at the same point, I'm not particularly amped up. Now, this the one interesting thing about this is that this is a new record that they're recording with Andrew Seward being back in the band. So that is a new dynamic, I guess, that is going to change things, right? Or at least shake things up.
New old dynamic.
Well, I mean, just like you know, reuniting of past band members can have some positive effects, right? Because the person that's been out of the band for a while is coming back in hot and wanting to make their mark, right? And that could charge everyone else up in a different way. Like it's a cool dynamic.
I think it'll be
interesting to see how that affects it. But like right now, like that's the hook for me. Is like, okay, Andrew's back in the band. I wonder what they're going to do.
Well, considering that, I thought the parting was not all that great. But did the other guy only play on the Shapeshift With Me album? Or did he play?
Tommy's the guy from
the Swedish guy.
Refused. Yeah, it wasn't like no one knows what happened, but it was like really bad. Well, not really bad, but they got
well.
A
it was
big
bad
fight.
When Andrew Stewart left, right?
Was it?
That's what I thought. I thought it was kind of a. I remember when he left, I thought Laura said something like, yeah, it was kind of like he was always too much of a jock for this band or something, or some weird like say, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I shouldn't say so much, but yeah, I don't know what happened with the other guy. They made it sound like it was like a passport issue or something, or a work visa issue or something.
What if Against Me's new album was a Rancid 5?
Well, I don't think they ever made a Rancid.
I would like it.
I don't think they ever made a Rancid 1, but I don't know.
Well, listen, we're running along. Is there any of these other stories you guys want to cover, or you guys want to? We'll cover one last one, then we'll wrap it up. This is Adam White's favorite story of the year. Weezer. They've released a new video for their song, for their cover of Aha, which also was covered by like Real Big. What ska band covered the same exact song? Was it Real Big Fish or? Or Boss Tones or somebody. Anyways.
It was Real Big Fish.
Weezer's got a cover album. It's called Weezer, the Teal Album. And they cover basically bands from the 80s and some other bands, too. They released a video of their cover of Aha's Take Me On or Take On Me. And it stars Finn Wolfhard of Stranger Things, an excellent show. And I didn't realize that at the time. The band in the video is Finn Wolfhard's band, Calpurnia. I do find it interesting that musicians always want to be actors and actors always want to be musicians, which I think is funny. Adam White, I know this has really been a bug up your craw. Has Weezer crossed over and they've taken this from cheesy, uninteresting gimmick to bizarre anti-art strike? Or is this just Weezer just trying to get anything they can to get back on the radio?
I get the impression it's not a high art thing. It just isn't. They I'm sure they think that they are that this is just a successful career move on their part. That's the only thing I can make of it. Because I sat down and you look at this video, and if they were trying for high art. Or doing this as some sort of like culture jamming, fuck you, that we're gonna lean right into this Africa thing and go crazy with it. They would have done something more bizarre or aggressive or anything. I mean, the fact that you know they have Calpurnia sitting in for them in this video isn't it's not provocative. It just is, and. The video is too polished to be, you know, something that they were doing with a smirk. And the cover is, you know, at least fucking Real Big Fish punched it up a bit, right? So, I don't know. It's just, it's boring. Whole fucking thing is boring. That's the problem,
the whole,
John.
The
Let's talk about Bad Letters
the
Anonymous.
Whole album
is this is
boring.
Boring.
I think they should have made the video look like an 80s video. Like, they had everybody dressed up like it was the 80s, but the film quality was very 2019. I think they should have filmed it to make it look like it was from the 80s.
Well, if I remember right, the Take On Me video was very style. Wasn't that the one that was very stylized, where it was, like, black and white drawings, and then
kind of
back and forth between the... Did I ever tell my Aha story about, like when I... But I was
I
like,
see where the story goes. Top trauma.
Well, like in like 1985, I was like 12 years old, and I just had joined the BMG record club. And you know, you have to send those damn cards back, and if you didn't send the cards back, they would send you a record. And one of the cards I didn't send back was not for the big Aha album that had Take On Me, but it was actually the follow-up album. But sometimes on those cards, they'd send you like two albums for a bargain price of like $24.95 instead of one for $14.95. So they sent me two AHA records, both of which I sent back. I probably should have kept them. They'd probably be worth something now.
The same one or two different ones?
No, the new one and the old one with Take On Me on it.
Oh, I see. Well, fair enough.
It was a wonderful time to be alive.
Well, speaking of a wonderful time to be alive, Tom Trauma, play a tune, and then we'll come back and we'll close this.
Actually, you know what, John? I don't have one. Let's just let it lie at the slits.
Let's play some AHA. Before you go.
No.
How about Real Big Fish?
This is Real Big Fish covering AHA. See you next week.
I've got to remember you're shying away. Well, I'll be coming for you anyway.